Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Marissa Hu. Marissa is the CEO and co-founder of Co-Ed Supply, which is an e-commerce startup based here in Cincinnati. And Marissa, you have quite the background. You graduated from Wharton in their MBA program. You worked in the investment banking firm of Goldman Sachs. And here you are in Cincinnati as an entrepreneur. And you started this company that I can personally relate with. It's called Co-Ed Supply. And I'm sitting here looking at this box. Maybe you can explain to listeners what Co-Ed Supply is.
Co-Ed Supply delivers curated college essentials on a monthly subscription. So we look at ourselves as a modern, cooler alternative to the traditional care packages. We send these bright orange boxes filled with healthy snacks, personal care items, and entertainment on a monthly subscription so that college students can get exactly what they need so they can focus on what's important.
How did you come up with it?
My co-founder, Andy, his brother was going off to college, and like, you know, any good big brother, he started looking online for care packages to send him and was kind of appalled by the options that were out there. They're expensive, filled with junk food, and just not really what a, you know, cool older brother would send. So we came up with something that offered, you know, a healthy alternative that college students actually would want, and also making it hassle-free for students to be able to, or for parents to be able to sign up for.
When did you start Co-Ed Supply?
We came up with the idea and started building and testing a little over a year ago. We actually just launched it publicly in July of this year. So we've been shipping for the last 3 months now, which
has
been very exciting. It's been fantastic. It's really exciting watching it grow, and especially getting all the positive feedback from our community, from the students and parents that are sending and receiving. It's just so much fun for them to get a package in the mail and really getting some great feedback from them.
But maybe you can share with folks who might be interested in learning more about this how they can go about signing up.
It should be super easy to sign up. Go onto our website at coedsupply.com and you can sign up for a subscription. We have a couple different options, guys and girls, things like that. And you get a box delivered to your door or your dorm every single month.
And Marissa, you are just a recent graduate of the Brandery Accelerator Program here in Cincinnati. Why did you choose the Brandery?
Brand identity is really important for the business that we do. Building a strong brand, Brandery is one of the few accelerators that focuses on that and also partners us with a creative agency in Cincinnati. So we got partnered with We Have Become Vikings to really work on building a strong brand, and the access to mentors and things like that that they've provided us has just been invaluable.
Well, that's wonderful. It's a lot of excitement going on downtown Cincinnati in the startup phase.
Absolutely. It's been growing incredibly fast, and it's just great to be a part of it.
Where are you from originally?
I've grown up all over the place, but most recently from Los Angeles.
Did you choose to come to Cincinnati just because of the Brandery program?
Exactly. I had never been to Cincinnati before, but it was a great experience to come and get to know the community. And the community has been incredibly supportive and helpful with really deep expertise in where our business model lies: consumer products, brand marketing, and logistics.
And if folks listening today, again, maybe you can put the website out one more time?
Sure. It's coedsupply.com.
Thank you so much for being our guest, and thank you for listening to Business Wise. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Marissa Hu. Marissa is the CEO and co-founder of Co-Ed Supply, which is an e-commerce startup based here in Cincinnati. And maybe you can just briefly explain what Co-Ed Supply is.
Co-Ed Supply delivers curated college essentials on a monthly subscription. So we're sort of the modern day alternative to care packages.
What made you decide to start your business in Cincinnati?
We came to Cincinnati for the Brandery. We're just introduced to so many people with deep expertise in consumer products, brand marketing, and logistics that it made sense to house our business here. Plus, the Midwest is reported to send nearly 2 times as many care packages as the rest of the U.S., so Cincinnati is a perfect home base
for
that.
So what's that about? I'm a mom of a college student. I send care packages. Why is that, you think?
I think it's just, you know, you're sending your student off to, you know, for your university. You're not going to see them for a while, and you want to be able to let them know you're thinking of them. And it's so great to be a part of that and be able to bridge that connection a little bit more between parents and students.
Your company has only been around for, a year and a half or so. All of your employees are under the age of 30.
Yep.
That's amazing to me, and it's exciting that you chose Cincinnati to come here to build your business, to create these jobs. And I think that's pretty much a testament to what's going on down in our downtown over the Rhine area. Maybe you can share what your feelings are about that.
There's just so much energy and excitement around building businesses in Over the Rhine. I mean, our Brandreuil office is there, and we relocated there. So it's been great that all the businesses around us are supporting us. All these big companies are even willing to come in and give us mentorship and advice. And it really helps Cincinnati as a whole as these startups are starting to come here and grow and become a part of the, you know, economic value of the city.
What advice do you have for other young entrepreneurs that are looking to start their own business?
I think the biggest piece of advice I can provide is just to get out there and get experience as fast as you can. When you're working in a startup, being entrepreneurial is really about being scrappy and being able to wear a lot of hats. On a typical day, I do everything from talking to investors and brand marketers to packing boxes, talking to customers, and even updating the website. Being able to have that experience across a whole number of different verticals is really important. So don't wait for the perfect time to go do it. Just go out and do it now.
So we talked about the great things about coming to Cincinnati and the Brandreuil. Maybe you can quickly tell us one or two challenges that, you know, lessons learned so that others listening might be able to avoid those.
One thing for us is realizing that when parents send a care package, when they buy a gift online from somebody, they put a lot of faith in our business that we're going to deliver a quality product, an amazing experience, and we have to stay true to that. We've put a ton of time and resources into customer service and making sure that we're always available to our customers online, on the phone, and just constantly staying in contact with them, and we devote a lot of resources to that, and that's something that we've tested out and perfected over time.
Again, thank you for being our guest. If folks listening would like to learn more about your company, maybe sign up for a subscription, what's your website?
Our website is coedsupply.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Tom, we had another successful Accounting for Kids Day a few weeks ago. Accounting for Kids Day in 2013 was on November 13th, and we participated in 107 middle school classrooms around the region. We had about 700 of our closest business and financial professionals taking time out of their very busy days to go really make a difference for these children. It was wonderful. You know, we started Accounting for Kids Day, I say we, really our firm, Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, about 14 years ago. Part of the mission was to not only help children at an early age understand the fundamentals of finance, but also to expose these amazing children to the adult volunteers with the hopes that many of these adults go back after Accounting for Kids Day to become tutors and mentors for economically at-risk youth.
And many of them have. I mean, many of the companies that participate on a greater than just a couple of people basis have adopted schools, have adopted classes, just like we have. And I think, again, they enjoy that continuing relationship, although there's plenty of opportunity for more people to do that if they want to participate. Cincinnati Public Schools, for instance, they can do that through the Adopt a Class program.
Absolutely. The Cincinnati Youth Collaborative is another opportunity for people to volunteer. I also sit on the board of the Economic Center at the University of Cincinnati, and our role in part is to help teachers and children understand the fundamentals of finance, and I know that we're looking for volunteers there too. There are plenty of ways for people who want to get engaged in this initiative to help, and I have to put a big shout out for our platinum sponsor, Huntington Bank. They have been our platinum sponsor since we started Accounting for Kids. We could not do it without them, as well as other sponsors that participate on the day, and you can go to accountingforkids.org to see those amazing organizations that do help us. And I just want to again thank all of the volunteers who participated. Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about how parents can help their children learn concepts of money in a fun way.
The first step, I think, is for the parents to make sure they understand the concepts of money, because I think as we saw going through the Great Recession, a lot of adults didn't really understand that concept very well. Hopefully they do now.
The problem is fundamentally that money matters just aren't taught in school to any large scale. And, you know, I think a lot of people think about teaching a child about finances as like home ec or as if it's some kind of ancillary classwork. But the practical reality is that that is a very core skill that people need to know at a very early age. It's critical. And the way to do it is to actually, depending on the age of the child, to keep it simple. You can start teaching a very young child the concepts of money. I can remember back in the day when our kids were little, we played Monopoly with them. And it didn't take very long for them to figure out that when they invested their money, they bought property, we landed on it, they love to catch us and have us pay them rent for landing on their property and using their property. So there are lots of ways parents can engage with their children.
As simple as taking your child to the grocery store with you and showing them how you have a budget and you can only spend so much money, and how you try to stretch those dollars by using discounts or buying items on sale.
That's right. The holidays are here. So let's take the advantage of that and help your child create a budget. They can go online, make a list of Christmas gifts, holiday gifts, put price parameters, let them go on and do some online comparison shopping. It makes it fun. And again, it's a skill that if we can teach children at a very early age, it can really help them with their financial future and empower them for the rest of their lives. Again, if you'd like to learn more about Accounting for Kids or how you can get involved in helping children here in our community with financial education, please just give me a call at 513-768-6796. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Tom, I can't believe the end of the year is just right around the corner. And there are so many things to think about as year-end approaches.
Healthcare has been a topic that's been on the front of everyone's mind because we read about it so much in the media. But there's a few issues related to healthcare that are tax-oriented that we need to be thinking about as we approach year-end. And one of those is flexible spending accounts. You know, this year you were only allowed to set aside a maximum of $2,500 into your flexible spending account. But it's important to spend that money by year end in most cases, because otherwise, if you don't spend it, you lose it.
Yes, it's one of those plans that are called use it or lose it. And frankly, that dissuade people from putting money into the plan because they were afraid that they wouldn't be able to get back their money if they didn't use it. But if you think about it, there are many ways that you can use your dollars that you've put aside in your flexible spending account that may not even be covered by traditional insurance. For example, eyeglasses or contacts. I know a lot of plans limit that, or even eye exams in general. Dental often is something that's not covered or covered completely by a typical insurance plan, but that is an eligible deduction through your flexible spending account. So just take the time now to see what you do have left remaining in your flexible spending account so you can make those appointments. That it becomes much more difficult as we approach the year end, but you do want to make the appointment before December 31st.
Yeah, and just realize that everybody else is in the same boat, so it's really hard to get an appointment for an eye exam in December. Your plan may allow you to have a grace period of up to 2.5 months beyond year end to spend your flexible spending account balance left over from 2013. There's also been a recent change, according to Treasury regulations, which, if your plan adopts the change, allows you to carry over $500 from one year to the next. So if you had a $500 balance at the end of this year, you could carry it over to next year, assuming your plan is amended to allow that.
Yes, that's the critical point. The plan has to provide for that. So if you don't know, you may want to go and talk to your human resources department or talk to someone at the organization that you work so that you can take advantage of that. Or maybe they don't know, and you can let them be aware that there are ways that they can help their employees by just adding that provision. It shouldn't really be difficult for them at all. It's an added benefit to the employee.
Staying on the topic of healthcare and tax deductions, another big savings for a lot of people are health savings accounts. And basically, a health savings account is an account where you put money in pre-tax that you're allowed to do if you have a high deductible health insurance plan. And you can put up to $3,300 a year for single coverage and $6,550 for family coverage this year. And if you're age 55 or older, you can put an extra $1,000 in for either one of those categories. So you can set aside a fair amount of money to cover medical expenses that you may incur that aren't met by your health insurance policy. And even if you don't need to have that much set aside, you don't lose that money. It's in an account in your name, and you can use it for future health expenses.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Cliff McClintic. Cliff is the Chief Operating Officer for DocHalo, which is a Cincinnati-based firm that provides HIPAA-compliant secure texting and text messaging for healthcare organizations. And I mean, who would have thought 5 years ago that my doctor would be texting me a chart or some confidential information? And we all use text today, or at least most of us, many of us. But that's a big issue as far as the confidentiality and the HIPAA compliance. And you guys have addressed that in your company.
It started out as two doctors wanting to text each other, collaborating on healthcare for patients, and it turned into a business.
You are the chief operating officer for this organization. You have quite the background in healthcare yourself. So how exciting is this to be playing in this space that combines current technology with something so traditional like healthcare?
It's something that right now is just on the cusp of really exploding into something phenomenal. You know, as you know, healthcare is a $56 billion industry, and any way that you can communicate more effectively and efficiently around patient care is really going to help the industry out.
Well, how long has the DocHalo solution been out?
Been out for sale for just a couple of years. Really, we started marketing it the beginning of this year. It's been available for large organizations. Our first customer, believe it or not, was a customer from Alaska. We just had got the website up and running, and this guy and his wife run a small practice in Alaska, puddle jumping around to their patients using CB radio to communicate with each other, and they knew that this was violating HIPAA compliancy standards. And so they searched us out on the website, and they are our first customer, actually.
Certainly with smartphones being what everybody uses as their communication device, it seems these days, either that or iPads, it's critical because as a patient, I love the idea that my doctor could communicate with me through text messaging. It's fast, it's convenient, I don't have to wait for him to call me back.
It's very efficient. That's why people are using it. And today, people are bringing, it's you know, BYOD, not BYOB, and they're bringing their own devices in, and it's very hard to monitor and control what information is being used on the text, you know, on the smartphones. And so that's really what the core of the solution is about, is being able to control that, harness it, and strategically align your physicians too.
What's been the most challenging thing to get this rolling, to get hospital groups and doctors and so forth to adopt this?
You know, change is difficult in healthcare. Typically, they're a little bit behind technology. You know, you have your big players that are a little bit more in compliance and more readily to adopt technology. However, you really need to find a physician champion, a staff champion, somebody to lead the project all the way through. It's something we specialize is finding these people and really promoting the product within. And once they start using it, they find the efficiency and effectiveness, and then they're kind of hooked.
Seems like as the next breed of doctors come through the career channel, that they're going to obviously embrace this completely.
Oh, it's happening now. Actually, the market penetration for smartphones in the doctor demographic is reaching almost 100%. With that, people are using their phones at work, like it or not. So it's really not even the new generation. The older generation, I think, you know, everybody's got a smartphone nowadays. And if you don't, you know, you're getting left behind.
So if someone listening today would like to learn more about how they can get information on DocHalo, how they could participate, what's your contact information?
You can reach us on our website at www.DocHalo.com.
Thank you very much, and thank you for listening to BusinessWise. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Cliff McClintic. Cliff is the Chief Operating Officer of DocHalo, which is a Cincinnati-based firm that provides HIPAA-compliant secure texting and secure text messaging for healthcare organizations. And I guess another way of saying that is you allow healthcare professionals to communicate on a secure basis with each other and with their patients. How does that work in terms of how do you make sure that it's secure?
Well, there's something called encryption. And really what that is there's a puzzle piece. You decipher something and then you have to cipher something. So it's really just a puzzle piece if you think about it. And the two machines first have to do a handshake and say that, yes, we're allowed to talk to each other. And they use a decipher key just to be able to do that and a certificate. Once that's established, then you're actually deciphering or ciphering the message. sending a key onto the receiver, and they're deciphering that message, and that's the only way. And that's all seamless to the user, so the user doesn't have to pass keys amongst themselves or anything like that. That's the technology doing that.
If I got a message from my doctor using your system, and I was in the network that allowed me to understand the message, I couldn't then forward that message to Crystal, could I?
No.
She wouldn't be able to read it.
That's correct.
So it really does offer that level of protection, but yet the efficiency and the convenience of texting.
Yeah, and that's the whole premise of the product and this industry.
So let's talk about it. At the end of September, there were some new rulings that came into effect concerning patients' personal information. Maybe you can talk about what this means and what impact it has to consumers.
The rules are constantly changing on the federal, state, between Joint Commission, CMS. This particular omnibus rule was really around vendors and business associates, and there's business associates agreements. And what that was doing was kind of turning the tables on them and making them responsible. Before, the larger organization is always responsible for their data, whether it's handled by other vendors or not. So in this instance, call centers and answering services that may text doctors at night weren't directly responsible, and now they are. So call centers and answering services are calling us quite a bit now to help them secure their technology, mm-hmm. so when they're talking to their doctors at night, that they're also secured because they're now directly responsible.
So they can't just send a text message telling the doctor to call the patient that called in. It has to be secure.
Yeah, any type of PHI, which is protected health information, and that's really what the HIPAA laws are around, has to be secured.
So with the advent, I guess, of this new technology, the encryption, the ease in which people can send information, do you foresee, for example, X-ray results, anywhere from X-rays to medical records and everything else being
Absolutely.
Texted?
Absolutely. Yeah, well, one of the features we just added was being able to send high-resolution photos securely, and we're adding different types of files and capabilities all the time, group messaging. Really, the possibilities are endless, and you think of anything that a doctor or a staff member or a call center would need, those facilities, those things are going into the text message. Text message is becoming more and more popular, and people are doing more and more with it, and kind of less with email now.
That's exactly right, and I can see how this same technology could really be used for other fields as well.
Any type of situation where you're going to need secure information. You could have a personal conversation, you know, with your neighbor that
Yes.
you may want to keep it secure, and you wouldn't want other people to know about it.
So if folks listening would like more information about Doc Halo, where can they get it?
You can reach us on our website. It's at www.DocHalo.com, and that's DocHalo.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Pat Longo. Pat is the director of the Hamilton County Business Center. You have been responsible, in my mind at least, in large part, for the success of so many companies creating so much economic activity and jobs right here in our region. But now the Business Center is really expanding outside of our Cincinnati borders.
Yeah, I mean, we've been on a really neat launch pad for a lot of different types of companies. You know, when I started in this position 17 years ago, really we're just being talked about. Now we're starting to see it. You know, everybody's got a cell phone. When I was starting in the mid-90s, yeah, they were around, but they weren't
very large, right?
Yeah, they were very large with very big wires
right.
and that sort of thing. But yeah, you're starting to see communities attracting entrepreneurs, and I think Cincinnati is positioning itself to do that.
Do you think you're attracting them partly because of the success you've had with some of the people who have gone through your incubator?
You find out entrepreneurs do a lot of research via the internet. So we spend a lot of time. You think that it's, oh, let's put up a website. Yeah, we're doing more with social media than we've ever done before. I've leveraged LinkedIn greatly. I mean, the number of people that follow us are well over a couple thousand people on different areas like Twitter and LinkedIn. Those are great tools, but people are really doing their research on what's going on with you and what ties do you have to the community.
And what kind of companies are you attracting and the success of those? And you have some pretty good stories. Maybe you can share a few of your success stories.
Our three latest graduates, we're pretty excited about this. We had a little video company called 779. They actually just moved down to Over the Rhine. They wanted to be where there's a lot of the art folk in the area. Another one of our companies is CyberVice. You get people that build websites. They're actually one that kind of corrects and updates websites. Starts out as one person, graduates as five, moves to Northside. So all of a sudden, City of Cincinnati lands two of our last three. Mm-hmm. And then we had a very big one. We actually had somebody that graduated from the incubator in 2006. And we held on to them for a little bit longer as a anchor tenant. They help us make, you know, match dollars for the state of Ohio and other things that help us cash flow. But they were called Edigent Technologies, and they work with data mining and sensors. Well, they just moved into 11,000 square feet of space, have 26 employees in the city of Norwood. So think about that. I mean, the three latest people to move out of the incubator total close to 40 jobs. If I tally up their revenues, they're probably close to $4 million. And when they started, they were all zeros.
The work that you guys have done over there is really a testament, I think, to yourself and to David Main, who really did create the Hamilton County Development Company many years ago.
Yeah, David's done a great job being a leader and positioning us to be doers. You know, we're not ones that are huge on tooting our horn. Yes, we're on the radio, you know, today, but we really spend a lot of time with our clients, you know, and we're still attracting good people that are coming through the doors. One of the neat phenomenons that's going on is this 3D printing. We're going to be opening up probably towards the end of November a 3D printing shop at the incubator that's going to have not one type of technology, but three or four types of technology, which we think is very, very cool. And the name of that company is Interactive 3DP.
People listening today who may have an idea, be looking to start a company, whether they're here in Cincinnati or maybe somewhere else, they're welcome to come and talk to you, aren't they?
Oh, very much so. Our doors are open. You know, if somebody wants to grow a company, we think we have the right environment for someone to grow and enhance their business.
And your website is?
www.hcdc.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Pat Longo. Pat is the director of the Hamilton County Business Center, and I know that you've been involved with almost 200 entrepreneurial entities. You know, when we visit colleges and look at different colleges, we see all these entrepreneurship programs that they have. And I guess one question I always have is, are you born as an entrepreneur? Do you have to have some kind of instinct, or is that something that can be taught? What's your point of view on that?
I think it can go both ways. I mean, it can be learned. You can learn from your environment. You can learn from a classroom. But it's what you learn from the marketplace, which is most important. If you have it in your family genes, does that make you a better entrepreneur? No. I mean, we've seen a lot of first generation move to second generation that doesn't always occur. We've also seen a lot of people where, you know, the parents, one's a school teacher and one's in business, whoever that is, and then the son or daughter grows up to run a multi-million dollar venture. I think what it is paying attention to what's going on in the marketplace. But what I like about what the colleges and high schools are doing in the region is they're spending time learning, what does it mean to be in business? What does it mean to plan? What does it mean to ask questions? What does it mean to communicate? How do I get up in front of somebody and speak? I think it's funny that we do all this hand texting and with our smartphones, but you know, none of my companies at the HCBC have ever gotten any dollars because of how well they text. It's how well they communicate and even better, how well they connect to the marketplace. Relationships are key, and seeing people that, hey, maybe you had a friend in high school that can help you or hook you up, or a friend from college, or a friend of a friend, or using some of the social media tools to make connections. You know, I think the thing is being bold, but also being able to do something that I think is very critical, and that is listen. You ask a question, pause, listen to what feedback comes in, and ask that question to multiple sources so you get multiple inputs or feedback.
To your question about whether it's born or can be learned, I do think some of the traits and attributes probably are born in you. But if you need to listen more, I think you can make yourself listen more. If you need to step out of your comfort zone, push yourself out to the limits a bit, get uncomfortable, you can do that with practice.
Oh, sure. And we're going to find out quickly if somebody's got it. You know, the market's going to tell them. There's this word out there called pivot. You know, it's kind of an interesting word. Hey, I was going in one direction. It wasn't working, so I had to pivot and go in another direction. There's nothing wrong with that. It's really what that pivot's based on is what's important.
And figure it out fast, right? Like you said, I mean, if you're going to make a mistake, fail early so you can take action and correct that so you can be successful faster.
Yeah, you want to grow fast, but you want to learn fast too. Mm-hmm. And then there's also this fail fast. Make the connection that this isn't working, so how do I shut that down? As much as I talk about success, and you know, we're batting between 60 and 65% of our companies succeed, 30 to 35% of them are not. So we're also winding people down. So we learn that quickly. So that's an effective tool that allows hopefully someone to either move on to their next job or their next opportunity quickly.
As Tom mentioned, you've had about 200 people come through the doors. How many are in the business?
We got 52 companies right now that employ about a little over 200 folks.
Mm-hmm.
And last year, in the last 12 months, we did economic impact. They generated a little over $17 million worth of revenue, and they gathered from other people, whether that be banks or angels or venture capital or the federal government through the Small Business Innovative Research, almost $9 million worth of other people's money to help them grow mm-hmm. their venture and prove concepts.
Pat, if people would like to learn more, come take a visit, see what's going on at the Business Center. What is your website?
Yeah, please feel free to visit us at www.hcdc.com.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Kevin Jones. Kevin is the regional president of Huntington Bank, and Huntington is a leader in small business lending. Maybe you can talk about why Huntington focuses on entrepreneurial types of companies and why that's so important to the bank.
We have historically believed that small businesses are important for the primary reason that it is the primary driver of the economy. Any economic statistic that you see indicates the level of importance in small business, not only as an employer, but also as an innovator.
Well, Kevin, if you're a small business out there, what are some tips you would give a small business owner?
The primary thing is to have a plan, and getting that information and getting that advice from your accountant so that as you begin your plan, you can then take that to your other financial resources and partners and advisors to hone that in and then get an understanding of how you're going to accomplish that is really important. We would advise any small business owner to start with the plan and keep the plan alive and then adjust the plan year by year.
Always a lot easier for a business owner to work with the banker and let the bank take some ownership and really some input into the plans instead of saying, hey, by the way, you know, I'm making this acquisition, I need to fund this much money. Allowing the banker into the conversation early on so the banker can also be part of the team.
In many cases, we have been brought in late, and we can sometimes be a wrench in that process if we're not brought in earlier. We will obviously help advise. We get an understanding of what you're trying to accomplish so that we can go back, do our homework, and work through to meet your needs. And if we can't meet the needs, how do we help restructure the process so that we can fulfill the need? In the world of small business lending, there are so many opportunities to engage other potential partners. As an example, the SBA. Now, that process is very important, and the SBA is also very important in terms of their influence. But because of that, we do need to be ahead so that we can understand how we fit that need and how it potentially could take advantage of other alternatives.
A lot of people, though, have perceived, and I think very erroneously, that the SBA loan is a loan of last resort. It is not the loan of last resort. It's a very good lending alternative.
That's absolutely right. By no means is it the loan of last resort. We underwrite SBA loans for repayment by the company, not by the SBA. The SBA is there to provide assistance to help terms and conditions potentially for the business owner so that as they are growing, they're experiencing a need change, the SBA can be there to help them facilitate that beyond the traditional financing that banks have historically been chartered with doing.
In today's environment, Kevin, you know, interest rates are very low, which is great from the business, maybe not so great for the banks, but it's important to try to use facilities, I would think, for a business to lock in those interest rates as long as they can.
Absolutely. Today is a great time to be looking at your long-term plans. There we go, we get back to the term plan again.
Mm-hmm.
What are you planning to do, not over the next 2 to 3 years, but really the next 3 to 5 years? Because we are at historically low interest rates, and despite some recent uptick, they're still incredibly low, and there are opportunities to take advantage of market conditions to really solidify one's business for 5 years from now, not just 2 years from now. Foundationally, the bank has been very focused on having resources that meet our clients' needs. And small business lending is one of them where we have adequate resources, substantial resources. So if you have an account with Huntington, talk to your local banker. Obviously, you can place a phone call into me if you'd like, and I can put you in touch with the appropriate resource. 762-1854.
That's
area 513. Code 513. Yes.
762-1854.
Yes.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Kevin Jones. Kevin is the regional president of the Southern Ohio, Kentucky region for Huntington Bank. And Kevin, one of the things that we sometimes hear from clients or rather business associates when it comes to their financing needs is they're surprised that a bank won't loan them as much money as they think they need for their business. And sometimes it seems it may be because they're just undercapitalized. Is it the viewpoint of the bank that they should be providing capital to their customers, or does the customer have to come up with some of its own capital and you're more of a supplement or helping them with their working capital?
It's important that a client, when they come in and ask a bank to help the bank support their business, that they do have solidified their equity capital base, because a bank's historic charter has been to provide short-term working capital, such as revolving lines of credit, intermediate-term capital for very traditional needs, such as equipment finance, perhaps an investment in real estate for the operations of the particular business, and maybe some other term capital needs that are focused on the short-term operations of the business. But in many cases, we work with people who are undercapitalized, and it's tough to ask a bank to help them capitalize from that perspective.
Do you still get people who push back, Kevin, on personal guarantees?
We do, and you know, there are situations where banks do relinquish personal guarantees, and you know, there are important steps to get to that point. Much of that has to do with business maturity, adequate levels of capital and support already existing within the business, and then the other factor is, quite frankly, the profitability of the company and the company's willingness to keep those profits within the business. Those are very important factors as it relates to personal guarantees.
One of the most important things that you can do when you're looking to get a bank loan is to show the bank how they're going to be repaid. And so as they put their cash flow projections out there, how will you, Mr. Business Owner, use these bank funds to not only grow your business, increase your profitability, but repay the bank?
I personally take it down to the simplest forms of banking. We've obviously purchased cars individually. We've purchased homes individually. And the first thing a bank does is show you the repayment schedule. It's important that we have an understanding how our capital commitment is repaid. We not only represent our shareholders, but we also represent our depositors who entrust us with their capital, ask us to provide a service to the community by lending it out and facilitating business growth. But the important piece is to be repaid.
You want to make sure that when you do approach the bank that you have all your I's dotted and your T's crossed. You're only going to have a chance to make a good first impression. And if the information that you give to the banker is not correct, you've got a problem.
You know, there are a couple of ways to do that. Obviously, talk to your accounting professional, any other business advisory professional. If you are still trying to get something off the ground, please talk to your banker. Your banker can help advise that process as well. If you don't know what you need, ask the banker. I'm looking to plan this expansion, or I'm looking to plan this investment in my business. What do I need to provide to you? Who can I get information from to help that process? That's a very important first step, quite frankly.
Do you feel like businesses are willing to step out of the comfort zone and go out and borrow money to make investments in their companies? Are you seeing growth?
Today, we see a lot of cautiousness. We have lines of credit that are in place with many of our clients that are not heavily used. So I do see prudent businesses today really evaluating and making very cautious steps as they consider those investments. That's not to say that they don't have an appetite. They do have an appetite, I think, as you probably know. But I think they're being very cautious because of the macroeconomic environment today.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.